Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers! And welcome to issue 142 of the world's greatest and only audio newspaper for a visual world, for the week beginning Monday, the 31st of January, 2011. We're still here, despite all those protesters in the Arab world. They can't shut us down! I'm not sure we're on their to-do list, but they can't shut us down!
They haven't tried, but still.
I am... Hang on, who's listening to this?
Andy Sonsman. If you don't tell, I won't tell.
In London... I'm not telling you where I am. Actually, I will tell. I'm in Mogadishu, Somalia. You lost them. And with me in New York, it's John Oliver. O-L-I-V-R. Over there, officer. Somewhere near the big blue chick with a lamp in her hand and the massive metal Methuselahs. That's the one.
Metal Methuselahs, Andy.
Yep.
Congratulations. Well, hello, Andy.
Hello, John.
Hello, Buglers. Andy, it's been snowing all week again here, really? Andy. There's so much snow around that weather people, as I believe they refer to themselves now, have actually technically been referring to it as a f***load of snow coming in. There's another f***load of snow coming tonight. How many inches? F***ing loads of inches. Now... There's a bit of a pep in my step this morning, Andy, and that's because I finished off the pocket coffee chocolates you got me.
All right, yeah.
long week.
They're strong work. I mean,
we
don't always do product endorsements on the Bugle, but
no.
Pocket coffee is certainly, it's a functional piece of confectionery.
What I will say about the pocket coffee, Andy, this will probably make it clear that it's not an endorsement, is that I would advise people never, ever to try any, because you do not want pocket coffees in your life.
First, you've not had a pocket coffee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Heroin is delicious. Well, why not try that? No, don't try it, because
if you're gonna
try it'll take over your life.
If you want to try it, you want to try it in a decent restaurant, so they cook it well. But, I'm sure Blumenthal could do some amazing things with heroin.
Yeah, he probably has done.
Yep. Whack it in a bit of liquid nitrogen. Bingo. Yum.
Bacon and heroin ice cream. But, now it's just experimenting for experiment's sake.
The pocket coffee, for those of you who have not heard it, it's a bit of Italian confectionery, which is a thin layer of chocolate in which you find a full shot of espresso. Mm-hmm. And that chocolate really lays its cards on the table, then picks those cards up and smacks you in the face with them.
Considering the coffee, admitted problem I have with coffee, you giving me a packet of that, Andy, is basically assisted suicide. you're basically a Swiss doctor.
It's just for those busy mornings when you don't have time to make a coffee.
Uh-huh.
A pocket coffee comes to the rescue.
Or when you do have time to make a coffee and you just want to give yourself that extra zing
That's
as right. well.
Yeah. I just like breakfast and coffee rolled into one. If I could do one that's bacon on the outside and then a shot of espresso in the middle, that would be good.
Oh, boy.
So would that make it kosher? Is it kosher? Has it got a lot of caffeine in it? I don't know. So the week beginning Monday the 31st of January 2011, meaning that it is now 50 years to the day since John F. Kennedy hit his first ever 170 checkout. And... That's basically kept him going, actually, throughout most of his presidency. Darts. He had a dartboard in the Oval Office.
Yeah, true.
And that's how he decided what to do during the Bay of Pigs crisis. he had to get 320s in a row before he would... He said, if I get 3 triple 20s in a row, I'm launching a nuclear bomb. And a couple of times he
triple
had the first
20.
Two.
Top story this week. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom or death. We gotta fight the powers that be. Let me hear you say, fight the power. Woo, woo, woo. Fight the power. Andy, this week world has continued... You heard.
Well, who are you?
You heard.
Was that John? Is that still John?
No, it wasn't. Sorry, I just nipped out for a second and Chuck D walked in here.
Oh, Chuck D.
But he's gone again now.
All right, I thought it was Debbie Gibson.
No, that was a cover.
All right.
This week, Andy, the world has continued its new favourite game of civil disobedience dominoes. 2 weeks ago, our top story was Sudan breaking up with itself. Last week, we led with Tunisia chasing its president and his family all the way to the ticket office of Euro Disney. And now, Egypt has caught riot fever too. The last week has seen the largest and most aggressive protest in Egypt since Giza Town Council turned down planning permission for the pyramids. Hosni Mubarak has been president of Egypt for 30 years, and in that time has not proven himself to be the biggest fan of things like freedom of speech. In fact, in his dating profile on eHarmony.com, he writes his dislikes as being red wine, people who chew chewing gum with their mouth open, and a citizen's right to a fair trial. Also, just out of interest, for anyone who is interested, his likes are apparently walks in the park, corruption, and police brutality.
In fact, you can do all three at once. That's the great thing about those hobbies, they are.
And what a first date that would be. That's Mubarak bringing his A-game. I'm putting my cards on the table, I'm not going to waste your time. I'm into you and I'm into this. In fact, Egypt has been living under state of emergency laws for the last 29 years, so he's actually only really been president for 1 year. That's the only time that he should be allowed to go into the democracy history books. The other 29 should have an asterisk next to them. It's like taking steroids in athletics. The rest of those years were draconian laws assisted.
Well, here's a joke for you. For any despots listening, here's a joke. What do you get if you cross a leader who's been in power for decades? Rising food prices, high unemployment and a widespread feeling of disenfranchisement in a predominantly youthful population who've grown up knowing nothing but authoritarian rule. Answer, not much. But what do you get if you cross all that with modern communications? Answer, revolution! Needs a bit of fine-tuning.
Well, it's good that you go with a joke there, because we're no stranger to discussing Mubarak at the Bugle. We even held a competition a while ago to insult him through poetry. And I'll tell you how I know this, Andy. I don't know if you stumbled on this either. So I was doing some research on Mubarak yesterday. Did you find this out?
No.
And the Bugle is mentioned on his fucking Wikipedia page.
Yes!
I swear it's true.
We started this whole thing off! We were the first pinprick in that big man's balloon.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Under Mubarak in popular culture, there are two entries. The first is Mubarak is currently rated 20th on Parade Magazine's 2009 World's Worst Dictators list. And the second is f***ing us, Andy. It says, this is a direct quote, Mubarak was featured heavily in episodes 82 and 83 of satirical podcast The Bugle. After news emerged that a man was jailed for writing a poem that insulted Mubarak, host Andy Zaltzman challenged the show's listeners to write a verse or haiku that was more insulting than the original. Many of the entries read out in episode 83 poked fun at Mubarak's alleged favouring of his son. Zaltzman later said that he didn't have the courage to go to Egypt after insulting its leader.
Yeah, I stand by that.
For a start, Andy, I've got two things there. One, it seems I've been airbrushed from history.
Yeah.
Host, Andy, what am I? Your sidekick?
Yeah, sidekick, yeah.
But also, I have to say, I was so proud to read that. It gave my whole day a lift yesterday, because here's the thing. Mubarak is clearly, demonstrably a vain man. He's held on to power in his country for three decades. There is simply no way that he doesn't Google himself. And when you Google Hosni's name, Wikipedia is the first result that comes up on Bugle. Also, his entire entry, surprisingly, isn't even that long. And I love the idea that in the last few months he's been in office, scanning through his Wikipedia page and suddenly found himself saying, hold on, what the f*** is the Bugle? And why do they think it's funny to write offensive haiku poems about me? Because it isn't funny. It isn't funny at all.
This might explain why you all started giggling behind my back 18 months ago.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I'm just going to do it. Hang on. Let's
look it up
let's
now.
Do this.
Look it up.
I have just looked it up, but I'm going to do some scientific research into this. Hang on.
Yeah.
Well, I've just done some math, John, and that entry, ironically, is 83 words long. Given that it was episode 83, that was the. I don't know what you can read into that. I think you can probably read the subliminal message: go onto the streets and bring down the government, people of Egypt. 83 words. His total Wikipedia entry, and this, bearing in mind, this is including subheadings, is 3,339 words long, which means that the Bugle is 2.5% of Hosni Mubarak's life.
He spent 30 years in power of a major nation, Andy. How have we taken up 2% of his legacy on the internet? This is a wonderful day, Andy. This is a tangibly wonderful day. We're only described with one line less than the complete history of his assassination attempts.
Well, I mean, which, let's ask ourselves, John, bearing in mind what is currently happening on the streets of Egypt just 18 months after this. Which were more effective, the assassination attempts or the lampooning in the Bugle?
I'm so proud. And thank you to whoever put it there and whoever's been keeping it there. It's wonderful news.
Well, I think we can both retire and die happy now, John.
Oh, God.
So
I'm just not sure I've ever been more proud of anything I've ever done than just scanning down and going, hold on a second, oh, my God.
The only slight cloud on the horizon is that my daughter, who's now just turned 4, has already expressed an interest in going to Egypt to see the pyramids, which she's read about.
Yeah.
It's been on books. My wife, very keen to go to Egypt. I'm going to have to come up with a very convincing excuse. Maybe I'll just wave that Wikipedia page at them. I cannot go.
You can be greeted at the airport, Andy, by 10,000 people. The Liberator is here. I hope he's brought some offensive poems.
I'm the Egyptian Che Guevara.
They're all going to wear T-shirts with your face on them now.
I'm not sure that's advisable. So, anyway. So, clearly, it is all kicking off down here on planet Earth as the Bugle has sparked global revolution. It's like, I'd say it's like 1848, 1968 and 1989 all rolled into one, but more so, maybe less so, and in different circumstances. But suffice to say, John, now is a really bad time to be an ageing autocrat. I mean, I guess it seemed like a pretty solid career choice when you got back into it, back in the 70s or 80s. A lot of job stability, not too much paperwork, complimentary aeroplane and tank, your own headed stationery, solid salary, which you can top up with a bit of freelance work on the side or large-scale embezzlement of public funds, whatever's your bag. It is pretty much the dream job. But now the likes of Tunisia's deposed ex-boss Bin Ali and Egypt's 82-year-old number one, Hosni, they must be wondering why they just didn't get a job in the local golf shop. And I can tell you this, I just heard this on the radio just before we recorded, that Mubarak's mummy is not happy at all.
Yeah.
And apparently this morning said to him, "Oi, Hosni, get in here, you little scamp. There's a load of people outside want to speak to you. What do you mean tell them that you're not feeling well, you don't want to talk to them? You be a nice boy and go and tell him yourself. Hosni, go and tidy up the mess you made. Hosni, no crispy crunches for you, my boy. Come back here, little Hosni. Oh, he's off. Oh, look at him go. Look at his little legs. Oh, Hosni, don't you dare go and hide in your pyramid again."
So how has Egypt reacted to these protests voicing the will of the people? Did they A, ignore them, B, accept them in the spirit in which they were intended, C, violently suppress them? Well, if you were thinking any answer other than C, I would love to know where you got your faith in human nature from. Because, frankly, I need to replenish my increasingly depleted stash.
Well, I mean, they have changed. They've certainly changed the way they do respond to this. I mean, it always used to be trouble on the streets. Any suggestions? Build a pyramid? Yeah, good idea. Let's build a pyramid. They're really angry this time, so let's make it super pointy. What now, true. Detective Hatton Coat? Oh, I've got another riot control solution, boss. I'm listening. A sphinx. Oh, what, mate? A sphinx. Right, I like the catchy one-syllable branding. What is it, some new medication for hemorrhoids? Not exactly, boss. No, it's half lion, half bird, half woman. 1.5. I like it. Great value for money. Okay, stick one up and make it too big for the Brits to steal in a few thousand years' time. So they have moved on. They've moved on.
On Wednesday, the Interior Ministry declared all demonstrations illegal. The police moved in to break up any gatherings, and security officials say 1,000 demonstrators have been arrested and a number have been killed. For his part, Mubarak says that he wants to, and I quote, hear the protesters. But to be specific, he wants to hear them screaming in pain as they're being beaten unconscious by policemen. For him, that sound is relaxing as whale music. In fact, he has a noise machine in his bedroom that plays the sound of protesters being beaten in jail cells so he can drift off to sleep at night.
Let me hear you say, ow!
The Egyptian police have also been rounding up journalists. One arrested British journalist said, "We were being dragged towards a security building on the edge of the square, 2 streets away from my apartment. And as I approached the doorway of the building, other security officers took flying kicks and punches at me. I spotted a high-ranking uniformed officer and shouted at him that I was a British journalist. He responded by walking over and punching me twice, saying in Arabic, 'F*** you and f*** Britain.'" Well, that's nice, isn't it? And it's reassuring what a press pass can do for you, isn't it? I'm sure the officer went on to say, "Seriously, thanks very much for informing of that. Sergeant, please beat this man extra hard." It's true that activists have once again made great use of social networking sites and Twitter to organise demonstrations across the country. They called on people just today to observe Anger Friday by going to rallies after praying in mosques and churches, and that seems to be happening. There are even reports that the Egyptian government has been clamping down on Twitter and Facebook, and it seems like Facebook is increasingly playing a large role in national insurrections. It would be great to have a record of this all the way through the past. Have a record of Lenin's Facebook page around that time, or maybe his Twitter messages at the time. At Lenin, calling for Bolsheviks to meet at the Winter Palace. Please retweet. Hashtag thinking about starting a revolution. Hashtag Justin Bieber fan.
Oh, you've already got into this now, John, haven't you?
I don't really, to be honest, that is just pulling things I've heard. I don't fundamentally know how it works. The Egyptian government has been attacking these sites, and apparently today the internet has intermittently completely gone down. Government have denied responsibility for this, although when he said that, Mubarak was holding a cable behind his back that looked like he just wrenched it straight out of the wall.
That was probably an Israeli shark, just bit through the cable. But the internet, it has created, around the world, 7 billion potential Spartacuses, essentially. And whilst, inevitably, some of them will be distracted looking at people sticking their flugel scrods into other people's galoons, or watching a dog on a jet ski jumping over a dolphin, or playing online snap. Even the world's most oppressive regime is going to find it hard to shut absolutely everyone up. There's 20 million internet users in Egypt, and even if 19 of them are swapping Tutankhamun puns, that still leaves 1 million to try and start a revolution, which is a lot of people. The internet is proving to be the single greatest development in the history of protest since the discovery of the bird flip back in 1916 in St. Petersburg. And because this generation of leaders are all quite old, they're simply not equipped to deal with a computer-based revolution. Apparently Mubarak said to his cabinet this morning, can we try switching the internet off and then back on again to see if it fixes stuff? So they just don't have the technical capability to deal with it. Certainly, these are the biggest protests in Egypt, certainly since the bread riots of the 1970s, when thousands of people misunderstood the instructions and came dressed as baguettes and flowery baps. And perhaps even the biggest protest since the whole Moses stropping out business, you know, the whole, we're out of here, we don't care if there's a sea in the way, our boss is going to play a series of 10 increasingly annoying pranks on you guys.
This has made pretty big news in America as well, mainly delivered with the angle, how does this affect America? Because if it does, we should all really pay attention to this. But if this is just some more Tunisian bullshit, we can turn back over to So You Think Your Cat Can Dance, because there's a cat on there that really can dance, but there's also a very funny cat that thinks it can dance, but actually can't dance. It's a show that's got everything.
The cat being beaten to death by the Egyptian armed forces as well.
The truth is that the US at the moment is completely f***ed either way. Because what are its options? They can opt for relative silence, as they did with Tunisia. The problem is that in Egypt, this will be explicitly interpreted as support for the Mubarak regime. On the other hand, if they offer moral support to the protesters, they'll be actively undermining a government it regards as vitally important to its security interests, and to which it sends hundreds of millions in dollars in military aid accordingly. There is also a worry in the US that Egypt may fall into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood, the largest opposition force in the country, who they fear are relatively anti-US in their stance, and there's no way they're going to let that happen. So what it comes down to is, I would really not want to be a spokesman for the US government at the moment, because how do you try to say nothing when nothing is actually saying something? You have to find a way to say something that actually means nothing, but be very careful that nothing doesn't accidentally mean something, because then you are completely f***ed. It's a very impressive skill. And it's very impressive. And for a political spokesperson, it's getting to test yourself at the top level. It's got to be what it's all about for them. It's when you get to separate the bullshit artists from the bullshit sculptors. So, consequently, White House spokesman Robert Gibbs would not say whether President Hosni Mubarak still has the Obama administration's full support. And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said the government should allow peaceful protests instead of cracking down. So, you know, credit to them, Andy. That's a pretty good piece of fence sitting there. Both feet off the floor, all the weight square between your arse cheeks. But, you know, can they hold that pose over the coming weeks? I guess time will tell.
But the most important angle on all this, John, was brought to the attention of the world by Business Week magazine, who pointed out that Egypt has now, due to these protests, become riskier than Iraq in the market for credit default swaps for the first time in a year.
I just hadn't got it across how important this was by seeing people dying on the streets and cars on fire, but that really has hammered it home.
Well, there are two sides to every sandwich, John, and one man's desperate struggle for the freedom of his people and a brighter future for his country is another man's chance to gamble on shit on the markets. And no doubt, brokers the world over are watching the news from Egypt, shouting at their TVs, "Come on, you've got tanks! Fucking use them! These freedom-loving hippies are costing me serious wedge! Yes, bit of tear gas! Nice one, that's got to be worth a couple of hundred thousand right there! Get in!"
There is now a genuine concern over whether there will be a domino effect of governments falling like with the other European communist governments in 1989, when they all seem to be inspired by one another, deciding to just call bullshit on the whole being a communist thing. And it seems amazing now that those countries were able to overthrow governments at that time without the use of Facebook or Twitter. They didn't even have cell phones, Andy. I guess they all just had to make definite plans to meet each other at specific places and then stick to them. So Yemen has also had similar protests this week, similarly inspired by the events in Tunisia and Egypt. People have been hitting the streets to call for the resignation of President Ali Abdullah Saleh, who's been in power for nearly 32 years. Yemen is one of the Middle East's poorest countries, with nearly half of the population living below the poverty line of $2 a day and without access to proper sanitation. The government is riddled with corruption, has little control outside the capital, and its main source of income, oil, could well run dry in a decade. In response
Sounds very good.
That's a recipe for success, if I've ever heard one. In response to all of this, President Saleh has tried to defuse simmering tensions by raising salaries for the army. Wow. That is a classic cynical capitalist move, Andy. Throw money at the problem. Oh, I hear that some of you are sympathetic to the protesters' cause. Interesting. I would simply say this. What are they offering to pay you in terms of a yearly salary? Because I will double it and I'll give you an extra 20 minutes for lunch. Do we have a deal? I thought so. Now please start hitting them with sticks.
35% unemployment as well. That is the place to be. But he's been in power for 32 years. The average age in Yemen is 18. So, it's this sort of new generation coming through who just have clearly started to look at the world and think, we have had enough of this shit. And Tawakkul Karman, who's a female activist who was freed after protests this week, said, "We will continue our struggle until regime change happens in our happy country." And, you know, with 45% poverty and 35% unemployment and an oppressive regime, I mean, they must have some serious reserves of optimism. They might not have oil left, John, but if they are happy in those circumstances, maybe oppression is what they need to stop them just losing their shit completely.
So, what about Algeria? Well, a state of emergency has been in place in Algeria since 1992. It's funny how much easier life is when you have those laws, Andy. Clearly, the problem is leaders giving them up once you've tried them. They're very addictive. Maybe Betty Ford should start a 10-step program to wean these leaders off state of emergency laws. First, you have to want to change deep down. Then you have to make a list of all the people that you've wronged in that time and try to make amends. Also, try to separate yourself from other countries who might tempt you into going back to your old ways. The protests have not been as intense in Algeria this week, and they are still very oil-rich as a nation, with money that they are slightly attempting to use in public spending programmes to solve social problems. So, although Algeria is another wobbly domino, it's also unlikely to fall. So, how about Libya, then? Libya seems a potential concern. Although there are no significant signs of unrest there yet, Colonel Gaddafi, professional whack job, maverick public speaker, and big Bugle favourite...
Big Bugle fan? Has to be. Well, I mean, he will have read Mubarak. He'll keep tabs on his neighbours. He's going to have read Mubarak's page and think, these guys, I like the sound of these guys. I'm going to tune in.
Where's my poem? He's clearly a little worried about what's happening in Tunisia, as he released a statement supporting ex-president Ben Ali, saying, "There is none better than Zine to govern Tunisia. Tunisia now lives in fear." Wise tactical move from Gaddafi there, Andy. Throwing his support behind a man who has just fled his country in disgrace and who seems to have zero support from the international community. Gaddafi really loves an underdog. Apparently, he likes nothing more than going to horse racing events and betting on a horse that was shot the previous week. all of these stories just make you even more impressed this week that Silvio Berlusconi is still Prime Minister of Italy. That guy is indestructible. He's the Highlander. Sure, yes, he took a model ceramic cathedral to the face. But the point is, he's still in office. And just this week, it was revealed that a second 17-year-old was apparently at one of his weird bunga bunga sex parties. And he also called into a live TV chat show to tell the host to shut up and that his entire TV network was a brothel. The guy is unstoppable. He could be the world's first bionic prime minister. State of the Union news now. And on Tuesday, President Obama gave his second State of the Union address. And even before it began, the talk here was less about the potential content and more about the seating arrangements. Because this year, largely in response to the terrible shootings in Tucson, members from each political party were encouraged to sit together for the first time. It was billed as a political date night. But let's just hope, Andy, that that was where it ended. Because you are playing with fire by putting Republicans and Democrats in that close proximity. What was designed to be a gesture of bipartisan cooperation could so easily have escalated into a gigantic make-out session. You are putting sworn adversaries right next to each other, elbows just barely touching, stuck together in a hot, sweaty room for a speech that could easily have amounted to a 70-minute aphrodisiac. All that tension's got to go somewhere, Andy. It's like all those Bogart and Bacall films. They slap each other across the face a few times, then start kissing. I just wouldn't have been surprised if there was a lot of action on DC's F Street later that night. And by F Street, I mean F Street, Andy. The following morning could so
not
easily
Fondle
have
Street.
Been...
They're going straight
no.
in.
No, no, Street. The following morning could so easily have been a mass walk of shame. Wrinkled pantsuits, tousled hair, Nancy Pelosi walking back to her apartment wearing only one shoe, Tom Coburn walking around with one hand stuck in his pocket to hide the fact that he's wearing furry pink handcuffs that he can't unlock.
How come Nancy Pelosi lost three shoes?
I don't know. The big theme of the speech itself was yet again how great America is. Obama said, America is not just a place on a map, it is the light to the world.
The light!
The only light! Cool your jets, big horse. There's loving your country and there's sounding like a stalker. And I think you may have crossed the line there.
I think it'd be refreshing if some president just stood up for the State of the Union and just said, yeah, it's all right. Could be better, could be worse. Any questions? Too slow! See you next year. I mean, that's basically all that needs to be said.
The big theme of his speech, though, Andy, was winning the future. It was a phrase that he used a number of times, and he talked about it so many times, he started to sound like he was talking about a war. And then you realise that that actually kind of makes sense, because the way things are economically in America, the future has now become America's greatest and most dangerous enemy. America must defeat the future, as the future holds a time where America is no longer the dominant superpower. And take it from Britain, because we fought that future hard, and we lost miserably.
Oh, God, it spanked us. It absolutely took us to school. And when he thought, for a while, he thought, yeah, we're on top of the future here. But the thing with the future is, as an opponent, it's like a Mexican boxer, John. It just never goes away. You think you can be on top for 14 rounds, and in the 15th round, out comes the future, bang, you're down, and your empire falls to pieces.
Feature section now, grape sex news. And this section is not so much about people having sex with grapes. It's about grapes not having sex with each other. A new scientific study has revealed that for the last 8,000 years, the wine grape has had very little sex. And, I mean, boy, oh boy, grapes are going through a real dry spell there, Andy. Yeah. That has got to affect their self-esteem.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, isn't it, when you have kids, as those grapes did. You know, it's so easy to let that side of a relationship slip. You've got to make time, Mr. and Mrs. Grape. You know, put your baby grapes to bed.
Yep.
Crack open a bottle of wine. Actually, maybe don't do that. Chateau Le Pouc 1998. I think Auntie Glenda's in this one.
But this is apparently a genuine problem, as it threatens to sap the grape's genetic health. The study found that 75% of the varieties of grapes are as closely related as parent and child or brother and sister. Dr. Miles, the scientist, said, previously people thought there were several different types of grape. Now we found that all of those families are interconnected and in essence there's just one large family. So, hold on, hold on.
A strong bouquet of incest on this.
What exactly? What are you suggesting these grapes do, Dr. Miles? Engage in one huge incestual gangbang? You make me sick, Doctor! Sick!
The problem is, son, they put each other off. Lady vines find male vines a little bit creepy. And,
oh!
And vice versa.
Oh, no, leave I know off. How pleased you...
I said leaves off! I can't help it, love, I'm a vine. Well, hey, check out my Pinot. Grigio, I think you'll agree.
Oh, no.
I'm done, that's it. I'm done. Just running out of time. Otherwise, that could have gone long. That could have gone
real
long.
It really could. Apparently, though, the doctor is right, because I looked this up and I quote, Merlot is intimately related to Cabernet Franc, which is a parent of Cabernet Sauvignon, whose other parent is Sauvignon Blanc, the daughter of Traminer, which is also a progenitor of Pinot Noir, a parent of Chardonnay. Now, this is not looking like a good gene pool. So it seems that grapes are going to need, Andy, to start having sex. And there's only one way to do this. Grape porn! Slowly peeled grapes. Slow-motion sequences of grape crushing set to wah-wah guitar music. Actually, do you know what? Now I think of it, that would be a grape snuff movie. Scratch that. Scratch that. That's probably not sexy to them at all. Or only sexy to a very sick grape. I guess you'd have to dress grapes up in little lacy pieces of underwear. Maybe that's what grapes find attractive. I guess we don't really know. But we better find out pretty soon and turn vineyards into huge grape orgies. Otherwise, wine as we know it is going to be gone forever.
Well, it's very hard to get vines to hump, John, because historically there's no need, because you cut a bit off and you plonk it in the ground and it grows. And let me tell you, that does not work with women. Let me risk that does not work with women. That has now been empirically tested, proved and convicted. So that don't try it, buglers. Don't even if you meet someone who looks like they might be a vine, don't do that.
That was Andy's dating game all the way through his teenage years.
Ring, ding, 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 ding. Don't worry, it'll be fine in no time.
Come on, love. Do you want to take a trip to the wine region of France? Yeah, I'm bringing a shovel.
Your emails now. And this email has come in from Matt Flick, who has sent in a photograph. And what a photograph. Oh, yeah! He writes, I have found your Mecca. It is a street here in Windhoek, capital of Namibia, where I'm serving as a Peace Corps volunteer. All right, Jesus, tone it down. Enjoy, he says. Anyway, so... And it is. It's a street sign. Florence Nightingale Street.
That's
in
great.
Namibia.
Can you tweet that picture, Andy? Is that a skill thing you have?
I can do that. Easy.
Do it.
No problem, mate.
Do it.
So that's lovely to have. I'm sure there are other Florence Nightingale streets in the world, but I'm sure not many of them are in the middle of a f***ing great desert. And that just makes it all the more sexy.
And, congratulations to Matt Flick as well. Good luck, Matt, over there. Congratulations on finding a much more valuable way to spend your time on this earth than Andy and I have found.
What do we... we've started a civil war in Egypt. He is trying to bring peace
to
Southern Africa.
That's true, Andy. Yeah. Turns out we're actually a lot better than we... And I'll tell you what else we've inspired. We've got a message here from Greg Blackburn, who says, hello, Andy, John and Chris. We really miss Chris during his absence from the podcast. In honour of Chris's triumphant return to producing the Bugle, my wife baked you these delicious sugar cookies.
Oh.
Welcome back. And the cookies spell out, F*** you, Chris. And then there's a butterfly, a heart and a dinosaur. In fact, you should tweet that. You should tweet that picture as well.
All right, mate. All right. Why don't you tweet it?
I don't know how to begin to do that, Andy.
Why don't you do it?
I don't. I can't. I would if I could, but I can't.
Can't or won't?
I just can't do both. Definitely both.
What was along with the f*** you, Chris? What were the animals?
There was a butterfly.
Right.
There was a heart, and there was a dinosaur.
Nice.
I'd eat the dinosaur first.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of an anagram of "fuck you, Chris." Maybe they got it wrong. Maybe they actually like me.
This email on the subject's not a jukebox for hire. From Sammy, who writes, "Dear Bugle, it has been officially confirmed that Andy will not be a go fuck yourself jukebox for hire. However, no other Bugle message relaying has been ruled out. For example, would John tell my housemates Chaz and Jen that they are awesome? Because they are, although you did not hear that from me. Yours in a spirit of exact exploration of the delineation of rules." We will not do that. We will not tell people they're awesome. Nope. However, if people do ask for their friends to be told that they're awesome, we will tell their friends to fuck you. Fuck you, Jen. Fuck you, Chaz.
Oh, my God. Well, lesson learnt. And let's consider that genie out the bottle. Now, there's a fantastic email here from Christopher Hansen, especially considering what impact we've now discovered this week the Bugle has had over major world events. He says, "Gentlemen and Andy," great start. "You may remember at the end of this past summer, I wrote in to tell you about the Bugle's checkered history of episode length." Yes, I do remember. It was an excellent email then, and this is an excellent email now. "And its relatively steady rate of growth into the future. My love of calculation compels me to write you this email. There have been, as I write this, 141 Bugles. That's a lot of bullshit. But let's take a closer look and see exactly how much bullshit that is. Once again, I count only full Bugles, so no supplementary editions, no nonsense. Now, let's have some nonsense. 140 Bugles equals 3 days, 11 hours, 17 minutes, 41 seconds, equals 83.2947 hours, 4,997.68 minutes. The average person speaks 150 words per minute, but since you're both talking, we'll round that down to 135. 4,997.68 times 135, 674,687 words. The average word in the English language has 4.5 letters, so that's 674,687 times 4.5 equals 3.0361 million letters. If you're typing in size 12 times New Roman font, as most of the world seems to prefer to do, you've produced a line of text which is 4.79181 miles long. Let's put that into perspective. God, this guy is sensational, Andy. That is 87% the height of Mount Everest. That is 71% of the greatest ocean depth. That is 5.1549 times...
Ten
to the power of eight astronomical units.
Yep.
That's one astronomical unit is the average distance from Earth to the Sun, 93 million miles.
Oh, it's 10 to the power of minus 8 then, I think, isn't it?
Well, why don't you do this bit, Andy?
Oh, no, no.
Why don't you
anyway,
from it? I literally don't know what I'm looking at
it's
here.
It's 8.151252 10 to the minus 18 light years.
What?
It's been a while since we dabbled in maths.
Yeah.
It takes 23 seconds for sound to travel that distance, which means by the time it gets to the ear of the person listening, you've recorded 23 seconds of new bullshit. And finally, if each word were contained in a milk jug lined up end to end...
Yes, this is my favourite.
Those milk jugs would stretch a distance of 42.5939 miles, or 1.6 times the length of a marathon.
Wow.
I hope this has deepened the Bugler's understanding of your accomplishments. Well, there's always a fine line to be trod between quality and quantity. And it appears we're certainly treading pretty hard on the quantity side of that line. But so we passed 3 million letters in the Bugle, and I can confirm I have listened back, and the 3 millionth letter was the letter K, although it was bleeped out. So do keep your emails coming into the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk.
You surf chick.
What, mate?
F*** you, Chris. You surf chick.
All right, I see.
That's what they meant.
Well done, Chris. Well done. That only took 5 minutes, but it was worth the wait.
Concentrate on your job. Right.
What job?
Sport. No time for sports. But by the time you listen to this, Britain will have won the tennis on Sunday morning. We will have become the greatest tennis nation in the world after Andy Murray inevitably beats the basically British Novak Djokovic. in the final in Australia.
If Murray loses, then the Scot will have placed second.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm not. There's no room for negotiation on this. It is finished. It is over. This bugle is over.